glad he collected the money before I started. I'm Barb and I'm an alcoholic. I'll get all the business stuff out of the way. If I hurt your feelings, if I say something to make you pissed off, call your sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, get one. Pray for me, I'll get better. I promise you. Like I said, I've been driving around a few curbs, a couple blocks to get here because that newsletter from central office says 606 North Bridge. And I think that I've been sober long enough that, you know, that I think all this stuff in print should be correct if it's coming from central office. And I've been here one other time, okay? So that tells you. And I've been trying to figure out since he's asked me what I was going to say, and I have no clue. So I'm warning you now. I have no clue. I came from an alcoholic family. My grandmother she's probably the only half-sane one in our family, but she had to swallow wine when she was younger. She didn't like the taste, so she didn't drink. I don't understand that. She didn't smoke either. And, you know, she died of hardening of the arteries from sugar diabetes. My sister is so-called a normie, but she should be here. If I acted like her a lot of times, I'd drink. I always say I'm going to come back as Al-Anon so I can drink and have a program, too. Yeah. My mother is definitely an alcoholic. You know, you can't tell anybody if they're an alcoholic. Well, I'm kind of like, who was that truck writer? Father Martin. I knew I'd get help on this one. Yeah, he says confront the alcoholic. Well, I had it in my family. I don't think there was drugs there. If it was, it was so undercover, nobody even talked about it. So, but they were definitely alcoholics. I'd wake up in the morning, some mornings, and my mother's glasses would be on the front yard, and my dad would be down the street, you know. And that big elephant sat in our living room, and nobody talked about it. My brother was doing time in St. Cloud Penitentiary. Nobody would tell me about it, you know. My sister was fighting with my dad all the time, and one night her great fight was... he wasn't her dad, and I didn't understand this. I'm 5 years younger than her, and so she went upstairs and got this picture, and she said, "See, Barbara, see, he's not your dad. This is your dad." Well, I was too young and dumb to figure out what she was doing, but I thought, that's cool. I had two last names after that day. You know, I was Lands and Wingy, you know, it didn't matter to me. After I grew up and, you know, and started in my own addiction, I know what she was trying to do, you know, and she got married and went off, and we moved from this little small town. I'm talking small town, 425 population. I think it's 428 today, you know. And they moved me to the cities, you know, Minneapolis and St. Paul in Minnesota. And I was young, dumb, and full of God. I had no fear. I wasn't old enough to have fear. I hadn't been around anything enough to fear me, you know. I was the baby of the family, so I got most of the time I got my way. And like I said, my mom and dad drank. You know, my mother was a good survivor. And, you know, she always taught us to take care of ourselves. And the way I perceived that, as I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I perceived it to say, don't trust nobody, take care of yourself. And see, I was born and raised Catholic, and I don't apologize for that anymore. I used to say I was a rediscovering Catholic, but, you know, I have a God today, and I might as well get this out in case I hurt anybody's feelings. I have a higher power which I choose to call God today. I don't make any excuses for him either. He's my everything. If you don't have a higher power than you, you're in deep shit. Yeah, and you're gonna, you know, there's a revolving door back and forth if you don't get past that fourth step. You know? And the reason I say that, I've been around a few 24 hours and I've watched it. I got off the phone with my sponsor a couple of days ago. I talked to her for over 50 minutes, and we reminisced. You know, so if I bounce back and forth, that's just me. she asked me a question. She said, what were you doing when you were 27? Hell, I don't remember. You know, I can remember parts of two because I had rheumatic fever, so that was enough drama in my life. I remember some points of that. I remember four a little bit, like pictures I saw, because I remember the dress and stuff. And then I jumped to 16 because I was in a foster home and my mom was already passed away. Well, I remember 13. I lived with nuns for 16 months and 2 days. How could I forget that? Because I was incorrigible. Minnesota's a little bit meaner with their children when they're running rampant than out here in California. I got to spend 2 weeks in juvenile center and 16 months and 2 days with the Good Shepherd nuns in St. Paul for being out after curfew, driving a car when I was 13 and hanging out with older crowd drinking. But I hadn't become an alcoholic yet. So if you're sitting in, I gotta get this out too. I know I will. Pray for me, okay? If you think religion is going to save your ass, it isn't. I'm going to tell you that now. This is a spiritual program. If religion would have saved me, I would have never became an alcoholic, living with the nuns for 16 months and 2 days, going to Mass every day, scrubbing the floors because I chewed gum and popped it in the classroom. I was 13, and I was the youngest out of 35 girls, and there was three groups. I had 15 going to run away with me after my mother died. So I'm not a follower. I'm not a follower in these rooms. I don't fit into those so-called cliques. That's why it's nice I can say that, huh? I don't dress like you, I don't talk like you, and I won't walk like you. Because, see, when I go to bed at night, I got to go to bed with me. I got that out of the way. All right, so I remember 16, and the reason I remember 16 is because my mother had already passed away, and on my 16th birthday, I was supposed to get her wedding ring from my dad that I never met because I was only 3 months old when he passed away. And my sister, 3 days before that, took the ring and had it cut down. It was missing a diamond put on her own finger. See, I always have to have something dramatized to remember certain things. But now if you ask me when my stepdad passed away, what year it was, I know my kids were not in school yet. I can't remember the year yet. I can remember my mom when she passed away because Kennedy got shot in November. She got shot in December, and she died that January. That's why I remember that one. Police officer was killed, and my sister says, "Oh, those poor children." And I'm going, "What about me?" You know, but I didn't say it. You know, I didn't say it. I had a brother 18 years older than I am, so my mother was the black sheep of her family. You know, because she wasn't married when she had him. And I'm telling you, I'm 60 years old, so, you know, my brother being 18 years older than I am, and God rest his soul, way back then, you didn't have children on the wedlock. And when my dad died, she married the only dad that I ever knew. And everybody, you know, I heard stories that he was supposed to have been a friend of the families, and I heard after he passed away, all of a sudden nobody knew him. And, you know, and my brother hated him. My brother hated him. And I couldn't figure out why. And then I got into high school. After I did the stint with the nuns, I got out in public school. I didn't leave the Good Shepherd home on good standings. They were telling me I was headed for prison, basically, is what it was. I started a couple things after my mom died. I figured I was angry at God, and she was my, you know, she was the only one that could keep me together, or, you know, the one I looked up to and I believed in, and God took her, so why the hell should I believe in anybody else, and why should I do anything? And I know that's when I started my run. I know that. And I rebelled. There was nobody over me who was going to tell me what I wasn't going to do, because I was going to do it anyway, you know. And so they let me go saying that they couldn't help me anymore. So they thought, because after I got those 15 girls going to run away with me, they, I guess they figured I needed to get the hell out of there. You know, they gave me this little crucifix and blessed me and sent me on my way, you know. And fortunately, I didn't end up the way they said I was going to end up. I didn't end up in any prison. I did, you know, jail time. And that was mostly at the end of my story, just to prove that I could go to jail still. You know, my priorities have got really screwed up there. Jumping back to then, I graduated from high school only because the judge made me, because I was awarded the state of Minnesota, because my dad did not adopt me legally, so he could not take me. My sister took me, and she had this thing about worrying about if you cross the street, you know. I just couldn't hang with her rules and regulations. Plus, her old man wasn't that straight with her, so. And that's another story. So I ended up running away from there so that they put me in a foster home. And I got into a foster home that was really a good one. You know, I've heard horror stories about foster homes, and I had a good one. But what happened was I got too close to her too quick after my mother's death, and I perceived it as her taking my mother's place. And I said, no way. So I was a junior in high school. Junior in high school. And out running amok, and I had met this kid I liked, and he wasn't the same color as me, so that wasn't welcome. And since the same color as me had shot my mother, and not the same color as me, a black man shot my mother and a police officer. And so my family was a little upset about that. And they thought I was rebelling because of that. And I don't know, maybe it was part of it. I don't know. but, you know, I made it through high. I ended up leaving that foster home under my terms. And ended up in this other foster home that I wouldn't wish a dog in it, you know. They had like 8 of us. They had 4 or 5 girls and 4 boys, and the boys ate after us. And if there wasn't enough food, oh well. And the woman used to put food in her bedroom and let the ants and the bugs get it, then to share it with the kids. So I graduated when I was 17, and see, like I told you, I was awarded the state of Minnesota until I was 18, or 21, excuse me, 21, and this woman, they'd take us, our summer vacation was to go to this cabin and clean for 4 days before we could live in it, because it's been sitting up all winter, you know, and the girls got to do that. And it was way out in the boondocks. I mean, no, I can't say. I'll be nice today. But anyway, I went one time, and the second time they were going to take me out there, and I said, no way. And they said, well, you're not 18 yet, and I'll go to court. And I said, no, you won't. By that time, I'd already figured out the system, and I knew a little bit about it, that I didn't have to have anybody in that courtroom that I didn't want. So she didn't get to go in that courtroom with me. So they had a little place in St. Paul called the Guild House, where you basically signed in and out. It was Catholic, you know, Catholic run. And you signed in and out, and they gave you 2 meals, and they gave you clean linen, I think, once a week or something, twice a week or something like that. So basically I was on my own, you know, 17, and and I'm still under the ward, you know. I'm still supposed to be checking in, and I didn't check in. I signed out more times than I signed in, so they told me I had to leave the premises because I was a bad example to everybody. And I'm the youngest one, you know. And I hit the streets of St. Paul, and, you know, I had my little job at the telephone company, and I got introduced to the nightlife. And I loved it. You know, I loved it. The gambling, the prostitution, the you know, the thieving, shoplifting. They had shoplifting rings, you know. And then you go into these after-hour places, and, you know, and you party all night long. You know? And I enjoyed it. I can say I enjoyed it. So I got shot. And I was pregnant at the time. I had been back and forth to Missouri and Wisconsin, and I was up there when the riots were going on. I was in St. Paul when the riots were going on. Right in the middle of it. Right in the middle. I wasn't scared. I was too damn stupid to be scared. And I'm in this after-hour place, and this guy comes in, and he's arguing with his old lady, and he takes his pistol out, and he's pistol-whipping her. Well, in the meantime, he's got his finger on the trigger, and it goes off, and I get shot. And I get shot in the stomach, and I'm pregnant. And everybody's panicking, you know, and I didn't want to tell who's after-hour place you're in, because they get fined like $150, $200, and you'd only get fined $50 if you're caught in one, you know. And so I go to the hospital, and now, I have to back up a little bit, because my mother was shot, and she was shot in the stomach, and she was shot in the arm. She died because of a bag of poisoning, and her stomach broke. That's why she died. And when the last time I seen her, she was in the, UMC, the University Hospital, and I knew she wasn't going to come out alive. I knew that. And the reason why I have to tell you that is because when I came to in that hospital with all these tubes all over me and tied down, I went, oh, hell no, you know, and I come up, and I don't know how I untied myself, but I did. And within 4 days, I'm leaving the hospital, and they're telling me I'm insane, and I said, I'm getting out of here, you can't keep me here. And that's when they found out I was carrying twins. So we made light of it that, you know, the bullet split the pieces of maybe two, you know. And after I found out, after 2 weeks, I got to go home with this girl, and she was watching over me. That they said I was a lot skinnier than I am now, folks. I was 3 to 5 pounds smaller than that, I'd have died. It didn't go into the bag with the babies, but it went in my stomach. And I still have a bullet today. And yeah, I made it to that. No problem. I had no fear that I was not going to die. I was not dying. I was not dying like my mother, just because that psychologist man told me that when I was 13, that I was going to end up just like my mother. And I was going to do everything in the world to prove him wrong. And I didn't die. I'm here, you know. And one night, and I wasn't drinking that night. See, I hadn't gotten completely into my disease yet. I was on the edge. I'm pretty sure I was on the edge. And three of us were together, three girlfriends together, and this one says, do you know the way to San Jose? And I go, no, I'll go. No problem. I had nothing to tie me down. And the father of the babies, he was in Missouri. I'd already done that trip down there, you know, and been shot at and kidnapped and all that garbage that goes with it, you know. My friends carried 38 snub noses. They knew what the cops were going to do before they had any idea what they were going to do. You know, and I made it out of there alive. And when they said, you want to go to San Jose? I said, hell yeah, I'll go. So three of us, I had my little diaper bag, most of my clothes, packed up in a 57 Chevy. Shocks were tied up with wire. We had a spare tire. It was a snow tire. It was in the trunk, and the only way you could get in the trunk, you had to take the back seat out to get to it. And $50 in a credit card, and 2 weeks later, I hit San Jose, California. And needless to say, they went back, and I didn't. I stayed, and I got to meet my first husband. And guess where he was from? He was from Missouri. I'm going, oh, shit. He convinced me to put the kids in his name, even though we weren't married, and I wouldn't marry him until a year later after they were born. I had twin girls, and they said they were premature, but they were only 2 weeks. If they were, they were only 2 weeks. They had yellow jaundice. I look back at it now, it's probably alcohol syndrome, you know, but I smoked. I drank when I carried them, and I smoked, but I wasn't a heavy drinker at the time. And the old thing was, you know, you drink beer, it makes milk for the baby, you know. And I drink Coke and brandy or something sweet, you know. I can't stand sweet drinks now, but, you know, and I came on here and met him and him. God bless him. We were legally married 14 years. I think we were together about 15, going on 16. And that became very volatile, very, very volatile. I ended up stabbing him, not meaning to. If I'd have stabbed him, I'd have got him in the heart, believe me. But I got him into his, no. He stood 6'4", he was black, and he was drinking, and I had his kids down there too, and the babies were there, and we'd went out. I just said, you know, George, I don't want to fight tonight, you know, and I told him, don't you hit me, because I'm not going to guarantee anything. And he swung at me and knocked my glasses off my face, and I had a steak knife. I went in the kitchen and got a lousy little steak knife. And, you know, and I'm showing him, thinking he's going to back off of me, and he's not backing off. He's coming to me, so I drop my hands, because, you know, and I stabbed him, and I missed his penis about that much, and I caught, and I got his artery, and he lost 3 units of blood, and he only had 5. And I called the police, and this wasn't the first time the police were there. The police said that one of us, you know, one of us, they were going to come out one time, one of us were going to be dead. And I went to jail, and scared. I woke up the next day and going, you know, what had I done? You know, I might lose my whole life behind this son of a bitch, and he ain't worth it, you know. And so I'm going, you know, I got out, and I had a court date. You know, they set a court date, so I went home, and you know, he's in the hospital, and I'm getting the hell out of there. I'm taking my shit, and I'm getting the hell out of there. And he's begging to see me, and he's begging for me to come out and see him. And I went to see him in the hospital, and he said, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I'm never going to do it again, and yada, yada, yada. And I believed him. Yeah, I believed him. And he came home, and I went to court, and they dropped the charges. The DA didn't pick him up. They dropped the charges. And about a week later, you know, we're sitting there drinking, and, you know, he threatens to call the police to have me arrested for stabbing him. And I go, too late. What do you mean? I says, you can't get me. They dropped the charges. You can't get it. You know? And, you know, and it was on and cracking from then on. You know, whatever he did, I tried doing. And when my sponsor asked me to look back on 27, the reality of age 27 is I was rip-roaring in the streets. Even though my children, you know, I was not taking care of them the way they should be, I was doing whatever I felt like doing. I wasn't faithful to him. He wasn't faithful to me. Well, why in the hell should I be faithful to him? He ain't going to be faithful to me. So, you know, and I thought I was young and dumb and invincible. And so he gets a drunk driving, and so I got to get one. You know, I mean, that's how long ago it was. You know, and then he gets another one. So, you know, I got to keep up with the Joneses. You know, if you wanted to drink with George, you got to either drink more than he did, you know, or keep up with him, or you weren't going to get your share. Well, that's the way it was. We got married in Carson City, Nevada, and I should have known then. You know, we walked into the chapel and got married, and as he walks out the door, he takes the ring off. Should have known. Should have known. You know? Yeah, you know, I'm too young. I don't know. You know. And we move out to this small town called Hollister, and on the outskirts of it, and we were both we had a house in San Jose in the cemetery area, and we were making too much money, and he didn't want to give it to Uncle Sam, so we buy this house out in the country, and meanwhile his kids and I are cleaning up the place, and he's back in San Jose drinking and doing his thing, you know, and then he gets into Hollister, and I threatened him. I was tired of it. I was tired of just his abuse, and he started going into town in Hollister. One night he comes home, and I hit the wall. You know, he comes to and he goes, hey. You know, and it's like 2:30 because the bars are closed, and he goes, who in the hell around with Mike Samaya? And I go, who in the hell is Mike Samaya? You know? So like I said, I had to keep up with him, you know. If you're going to kick my ass for something, I'm going to go either do it or find out if it's worth getting my ass kicked for. Yeah. So I went into town and went into this little bar. And this so-called bartender's in the back thinking he is, you know, he is it. The bartender. He had his bell-bottom dress pants on with his shiny patent leather shoes and his white shirt and a vest, and I went, I've actually got a bed for him. And then this damn bar didn't even have Christian Brothers. They didn't have Jack Daniels. You know, they wanted to feed me Kessler's. And I'm going, shit, Kessler gave me a headache. I don't like that well shit, you know. And so I kept getting accused of this man, so I kept going back, checking him out. One night we checked each other out, pool table and all. And I really did not like him. I thought he was a smart ass, and so was his brother. But, you know, if you're getting your ass kicked for something, being accused of it, you might as well do it so that when you get a kick, it's worth getting kicked for, you know? And it was on and cracking, you know, and the sheriffs were out there because we were in the country, and I ended up having the sheriffs escort my kids and I into town, and by that time, I decided I liked this little short Mexican, and he was still messing around with his ex and doing his stuff, but it was okay, you know. We were all drinking and bartending. I got a job bartending there, so, you know. See, I'm a good chameleon, and I'm a good survivor. I worked in restaurants, so that I always had food for my children, and I always had bar connected to the restaurant, so I had my booze. And if I want a little extra, you know, with all the truck drivers and stuff, you know, especially his brother and half the family of his, you know, were truck drivers, you know, they'd come in and, you know, switch things. You know, I didn't mind switching the booze with them. It wasn't my booze anyway, so I wasn't losing any money. I was making money off of them, you know. They'd give me them cross tops and all that other stuff, and I'd sell that shit, you know, and give them the free booze. So I was doing okay, you know, I had no problem with it, you know. And his brother, I met his brother, and Willie and I kicked it off, you know, and just as friends. And Willie had came into the program, and he was scared. He was dying. His body was shutting down. He needed a heart transplant, but the rest of his body wasn't good enough to get one. Plus, he wasn't married, so his home life, they look at your home life, you know, after your transplant to see if it's worth it and that. And he was dying, and he knew it. And, you know, him and I, we would drink together. It was funny because he'd be on one end of the bar, and Mike would be on the other end of the bar, and they'd pass out, and Willie would be hanging on to his drink, and he couldn't get that glass away from Willie for nothing, you know. Mike down at the other end of the bar, you'd hear this thump, and pretty soon somebody would get up and go, who pushed me? And he fell off the damn bar stool that's the other end, you know. But Willie would get me going, and he drank a Miller's beer with a shot of Southern Comfort. I tried that once, and he beat me. I said, okay, Willie, I said, I'll tell you what. Normal people would not, you know, I mean, you get sick, you throw up, and you can't handle the shit, you leave it alone, right? I said, Willie, I'll drink your Miller's beer, but I'll take shots of Jack Daniels with you, and I'll drink you underneath the table. And I did. I did. You know, I worked at Ford Motor Company with those guys with White Lightning. You'd have to put it in a jar because it'd eat the cup. You know? It tastes like kerosene, but when it hits, you know?
Uh-oh. I'm throwing things.
It hit, and that's what I was after. I was after the effect. And how I found that, I was after I got in the program with my sponsor because she wanted to make me a virgin something or other without the booze, because I said, oh, I like the taste. And she goes, no. And she was going to make me a white Russian or something that didn't have the booze in it. And I said, I couldn't drink them when I was drinking. You know, so I said, I don't like that shit. You know, and she goes, you were after the effect. And I was after the effect. And we had a party for Willie in February of 83, because we knew he wasn't going to make it to his birthday, Cinco de Mayo's birthday. And March of that year, I went in program the second time. Because, see, I had another buddy I worked with, Cliff. I don't even know if he's alive. God bless him. We worked at the smorgasbord together. He was the only man that could drink me underneath the table. The only one. And that, I mean, he'd make me sick watching him drink, you know. But he was cooking. He was a chef. He was a chef. But he was cooking at the, and, you know, and he'd make the gravy and pour the wine in, pour him a glass. He had the glass of wine, and he had his mixed drink, and in the cooler he had his beer. And that's how he functioned, you know. Well, he went through some DTs, and he decided he was going to try AA again. Well, he was gay, too, so he was living his two lifestyles, and he was having trouble with everybody knowing that, you know. Talented man. He could play the piano, and he could cook. There was no doubt about it. And I walked through DTs with him, and it scared shit out of me. Now, see, I remember Days of Wine and Roses, and I remember, oh, I'll never be that way. I'll never do that. And I watched Cliff go through the DTs, and we went to AA, and of course I didn't go in Hollister, I had to go to Gilroy because I did not want anybody to see me in AA. Now, it didn't matter that five cops were putting me in the back seat of a car coming out of the bar, but I was worried about if they were going to see me going to an AA meeting, you know. So we went to Gilroy, and there was a couple people in that room, and they had me read how it works. And I went, this is just too perfect for me. I can't do this shit, you know. I'm raised Catholic. 10 Commandments. How the hell are you going to do 12 steps, you know? But there was something about a couple of them there that in their eyes, you know, I looked in their eyes and I knew they weren't lying and I knew they were happy, you know. And I wasn't. And I stayed dry for 25 days. And I deserved to go get drunk. Well, I'm here to tell you, folks, you cannot have a belly full of booze and a head full of AA. It just don't work. It just don't work. I don't care if you only went to one meeting. It will not work. You will not get that effect that you were after. And I stayed out there for not a year and a half. And the only reason I know that is after I got in here, back in the second time around, the girls that he sent me with to this meeting at this detox place had that amount of time. They had, you know, a year and a half and 2 years. And he sent me with these three women. Now I'll tell you about these women, okay? There was one Indian, one Mexican, and this one white girl, okay? And I had nothing in common with any of them. This Indian was a nurse, and she was on her spirit run or whatever, and Jenny, and she's passed away. She was Mexican, and she had plastic curtains in her house. And I thought, well, that's not too bad. I've had plastic curtains, you know. But she, you know, she slept underneath bushes, and she had a garbage can, so I hadn't done that one yet. And then this white girl, Wheat was her name, and she just, I mean, she had an education that, you know, I mean, she had no business being there, but she was, and she would talk this strange talk, and, you know, and dress different, and oh, hell no, you know, and they had this raggedy-ass car that you swore wasn't going to make it across the street, and Cliff made me go with them out of town to Morgan Hill, you know, and I did it. Well, you know, you don't do those things and then expect to drink or use again because you screwed up, you know, and so when I came back in, the last run, and I say this is God's mercy with me, and my time's up. I haven't got the program yet. I'm going to take it anyway. Okay. I got here, and not on my own. I had to have somebody walk me down to the meeting because we had 13 bars in Hollister, and the meeting room was two blocks away, and I knew I wouldn't get past those bars to get to a meeting. And, you know, my journey began. And I don't know. I don't want to hurt you guys' feelings. You know, recovery homes are good, but I like what Clancy says about that. You know, you take you out in the ocean in this yacht, and they give you 30, 60 days, and then they tell you to jump out of that damn yacht and swim, you know. And I came from the hard knocks. I came right off the streets, and I had enough tough people to tell me to shut up, sit down, and listen because I knew nothing. Take the cotton out of your ears, shove it in your mouth because you knew nothing. and my journey began. Did I like it? No. Did I argue with him? Yes. Did I work the steps to the best of my ability every day? No. I still don't do that. I'm still, yeah, I know that's a German and Irish, I just know it is. You know, and, you know, I started this journey, and Mike and I had this on and off relationship, like I was saying, and he was drunk, doing his thing and with his snakes and doing whatever he wanted to do and in and out, in and out, in and out. And he decided to come in, and it was right before my birthday, and he had got his final divorce papers from his second wife. Yeah, because I'm his third. His second wife. And I was just getting away from him. I was just getting, you know, I was doing what my sponsor was telling me. I was going to meetings. I was involved. I was doing all this stuff. And he showed up again. And he proposed to me. And guess what I said? Did I say, no, I'm going to listen to my sponsor? I said, yeah. Let's go. My sponsor looked at me and said, you can't live with him, so you're going to marry him? Sounded good to me. Sounded good to me. You know, and if you want to work the steps, stay in a relationship. I think Duffy said, you know, a relationship is 238 snub noses, cocked, loaded, pointed at each other. Who's going to pull the trigger first? You're either going to grow or go. Well, I, by the grace of God, and the grace of God only, because my sponsor told me it was by the grace, and, you know, I'm sitting here, at the end of this month, if I make it to the 27th, I'll have 27 years. That is not me. The one that they said would never make it, and I had no business marrying, he celebrated 24 years. Now, he was a whole man when I had him. You know, don't mess with me, this is what happens. No. I had a feeling about that. You know, it's been a hell of a journey. We just lost another one from our home group, you know, and he used to be my dance partner, and you know, and every year I come up on my birthday, all this comes up. I had no sense of what I was going to tell you tonight. I wish I could tell you, work the steps. Work the steps that your life depends on. Work it. If you half-ass do it, if I half-ass put in the effort into this program as I did getting drunk, I was going to make it. And I'm still here. But I prayed, I cried, I screamed, I kicked, but I also took direction. I don't know. Those old sponsors back then, they didn't give you direction. They gave you orders. You know, you will. You will be the greeter at the door. You will make coffee. You will clean ashtrays. And I quit smoking in the smoking meetings. You know? Nothing is impossible if you follow the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing is. But you have to keep God, your program, and then you in that order. Do you think I got sober to have my husband lose his eyesight and lose his legs? Hell no. If I was told that probably in the first 3 months of being here, I'd have ran. And I shared that one time in a meeting. If I knew the pain that I was going to have to walk through, I'd be nuts to say I want to be sober. And I got told after me, you can't say that. You're going to scare somebody. Well, if I scare you, good. Good. I hope it's a good fear. Because my journey has just begun. This year, I finally accepted that I cannot change nothing in my past. Not one thing. Not one thing. And I'm telling you, I took my daughter's son from her. Because I found marks on him. My other daughter didn't want to speak to me for over 9 years, and we're speaking today. It hasn't been a happy, joyous, free. It hasn't been. But it's been worth every inch of it. Every inch of it. I would not trade it for nothing in the world. I am the one that will say that the worst day in sobriety is still 500 times better than the best day out there. There is no Black Jack Daniels, no Vera Herbergale, no Christian Brothers can give me the high that I have when I'm standing in the convention holding hands with all the people and saying, "Our Father." When you can show me that feeling, in liquid form, pill form, powder form, whatever. I'll probably be the first one to try. But I've been around long enough that I know it hasn't happened. And I know there's a lot of marijuana maintenance cards and stuff, you know. I'm just grateful for the people that were here when I got here, that were mean enough and tough enough to tell me to stay abstinent. When I read the book, it said abstinence from everything. Dr. Paul talks about it. Bill talks about it. You're depressed, get out there and help somebody else. You know? I'm over my time. I know I am. I can't say enough for this program. I know I went into my back history, and obviously God wanted me to for some reason. You know, I'm sitting here. I'm standing here tonight. I should be dead. I should have been dead when I was two. I should have been dead when I was shot. I should have been dead, I don't know how many times, and I'm not. My husband is sitting in that wheelchair. Yeah, he's blind. He ain't got no legs and only one arm and false teeth and damn near bald and ornery as hell. And they said he wasn't going to make it, you know. And you know, and he's still alive. I haven't killed him. And we're not divorced. And we celebrated 24 years of marriage. You know, when he celebrated 24 years of sobriety, that February, 25 years of marriage. Through the programs, through the grace of God, and through these steps. Thank you.
Talked a lot about things Mike doesn't have, you know, arms, legs, and sight, but he sure is cute, isn't he?
Yeah.
We got a late start tonight because we had a little trouble getting everything arranged. I think if I understood it right, Mike was the one driving here tonight. So. All right, enough silliness. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you very much.